welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour two of this Hagman and Hagman Report on this Monday, January 11th, 2016. We're coming to you live from Northwest Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir.
We're live on Global Star Radio Network, seen live on YouTube and simulcast on Blog Talk Radio.
It's a chilly 16 degrees out.
Man,
traffic
had,
is light. No, I'm kidding.
We had the nicest fall and into winter, the nicest, mildest I can remember, up until New Year's morning when we woke up and there was snow on the ground. And yeah, when there's lots of snow and it's gray and it gets dark early, we like to sleep. We like to get good night sleeps. And if you don't get a good night's sleep, we usually don't have a great day. Which leads us to our announcement before we get back into the news.
Well, I'm not sure exactly how that works into Whole Tones Live.
No, oh, I'm sorry.
No, no, actually.
I thought we were doing Casper.
No, actually.
My fault.
Whole Tones, well, you know what, have you tried your Casper mattress yet? Go to Casper.com, Casper.com/CFP Radio. Seriously, there's an unscheduled, just a little notation, because they're great mattresses. And I do have to say that you have one of those mattresses and Whole Tones Live playing in the background. Oh, man. You know, WholeTonesLive.com has a great offer for Hagman and Hagman listeners. Go to WholeTonesLive.com and check out what they've got. You can order DVD sets. Have that music playing in the background. And we know how frequency. This is actually out of the Bible. God spoke the world into existence. There's frequencies that are being used. So when you're lying back on your Casper mattress, have some frequencies. Use the frequencies as God intended. A gift from God, the Hertz, megahertz scale. And Michael Terrell, Joe, you pointed out that he had talked about that.
Yeah, and unfortunately too often we like to work out and get going based on the secular music and music on the radio, which is not anything that is healthy for your mind or your body. It is counterintuitive to a healthy spiritual mind and body system.
You know, I was great for having classical music playing in the background of my office when I worked. Okay, and
I like to do that. So.
Yeah, because it does clear your mind. But even better, if you ever do, if you own a company and you have a labor force. When I say labor force, I don't even want to qualify. Disclaim. You know, I'll use disclaimers for terms. If you have people working for you, or if you have people working, or if you're working yourself, have music that aids in productivity. Use music that aids in stress reduction if you're stressed. Use music to aid in healing if you have an ailment. God has given these gifts to us. Go to WholeTonesLive.com, WholeTonesLive.com, and check it out. Definitely check it out. Michael Terrell, you heard him on Hagman and Hagman last Tuesday. What a great guy.
Yeah, if you have any doubts before you want to order the product or even listen to it, go back to that interview first 2 hours Tuesday and listen to Mr. Terrell and his background, what he explained on the show, how he came to find this and use it. And he's a great Christian man, and we look forward to having more interviews with him on the show.
That's right. And since we're all over the place with sponsors, why not talk about healthmasters.com? You know, healthmasters.com, as you're sleeping on your Casper mattress, listening to Whole Tones Live, you might as well be popping some good nutritional supplements. They've got them. Healthmasters.com, they've got them.
While you're eating some American Survival Wholesale freeze-dried candy.
That's right. There you go. We got you covered every which way. We got you covered every which way. But I'm serious. You could tell the difference when you take supplements from HealthMasters.com. HealthMasters.com. You could tell the difference.
During the break, I actually went up there and did take some vitamins.
It's because you're...
Because, you know, when you kind of feel a cold coming on or you get that itch in the back of your throat, you're not sure if you're going to get a sore throat.
That's why I spray Lysol down on the microphones and everything.
I went up and I grabbed some vitamins and I took them, even though I should be taking them every day and every morning as I'm supposed to. But, life gets so hectic sometimes you forget. And I wanted to make sure that I took my vitamins today, so I went up and took some out of your stash.
Right. I've got them. Actually, I've got them in a bug-out bag. It's interesting, too. I think we need to be prepared. You know, I had mentioned the first hour and the closing of the first hour. Really, if you can't see civil war coming, we are a nation divided. We are a country divided. The influx of immigrants into this country, we know what that's about. It's not about some humanitarian relief effort, because and my wife gets mad at me when I say this, we caused this, but she says, please make the distinction between the government, the criminal elements within the government, and the people that are, you know, doing a good job. And I should do that. Mm-hmm. We should do that.
Yeah.
When we say that we caused this, please understand, we cannot paint with a broad brush the people within our government, because there are some good, hardworking people there that want to do the right thing. We have to acknowledge those people. On the other hand, there are people who are running a criminal enterprise of their own, and it's that cabal, it's that oligarchy, it's that oligarchical system, it's that neo-Nazi. Well, there's nothing neo-Nazi about these people. It's all Nazi about the people. It's that fascist part.
The criminal group inside the government, just like when... You know, you were talking about message boards attitudes and ideas that are pushed off there. So often we see, and even take it back to 9/11 and the way that it was dealt with Afghanistan and Iraq, even though there's no connection to the attacks that they had.
Argument with Afghanistan, but then that's the Brzezinski aspect of things.
But a good example is with Russia. We see tensions between Russia and America building.
That's correct.
The American people and the Russian people, I'm sure, understand that there is no problem. You know, we could get along perfectly fine with each other.
Yep.
It's the governments that are creating the problem. It's the government that decided to launch wars.
Let me clarify that even further. It's the globalists holding positions within the governments,
mm-hmm.
and it's the non-governmental organizations or NGOs. Sometimes I'll mention NGOs. NGOs are heavily involved in the gaming of all of us. They are heavily involved in creating the geopolitical landscape across the globe, including America, including Canada, including the country where you're listening to this from. So just be clear about that.
And humanity as a whole, regular people, whether you're Ukrainian, Russian, Chinese, American, nobody wants war. Nobody wants to see famines and mass, you know, genocides. This doesn't happen as groups of regular people get together, you know, to plan and plot how to destroy the rest of populations. I'd say 99.9% of all humanity on Earth right now want nothing more than peace and just to be able to live their life in a simple manner, raising their children and family.
That's right.
But as you said, it's a criminal cabal inside of a authoritative system that creates these conflicts. And, you know, you've seen it. We've seen it all too often, where nations of people are sent off to wars that really have no business. They have no business fighting in, and it's sad when we see how controlled we really are. When, you know, 0.001% of the people of this earth are the ones that want this war, as they use it as a way to make money or to cull the population, whatever the purposes may be, while the rest of humanity could coexist without these evil cabalists and would do so peacefully. And it's just, we have to break the chains of the control that they have over us. And it's not going to happen till Jesus returns, but it will happen.
It indeed. And we have to understand, I believe, you know, we can easily say we're being gamed. We can easily say that, for example, the elections are nothing but a sham. This is a big club. It's an oligarchy. It's a party that, and you're not part of it. We understand that. We can say that, but oftentimes we don't really give you the background, or oftentimes the background is not really given in a conversational manner. It's either strictly like a documentary, or strictly in a manner that doesn't have any cohesiveness to it. I'd like to be able to talk about the CIA's involvement, for example, in the counterculture. I had mentioned last week about the Tavistock Institute, and I really am between the occult, the Nazi occult, and the Tavistock. Both really, and Paul McGuire writes about this in A Prophecy of the Future of America in Mass Awakening, in the Babylon Code. He references this.
Yeah, the whole counterculture breakdown. Yeah, yeah. He does a fantastic job.
He speaks about it. Right. Yeah. We need to understand this because you had, you know, as you look past to the 20th century, and some people find this boring, but you know, if you're being gamed, okay, how are you being gamed? Who's gaming you? Why? And is it all of a sudden, or how do we get to this point? We had the first two wars, World War I, World War II, and then, well, of course, you can go back, you know, wars before that, and then Korean conflict.
Vietnam War, right? Yeah.
So you can see how this has gone, and then, of course, we had the bump with Desert Storm. And that was a total lie with Kuwait, and that was just we were gamed then.
Now the longest war in U.S. history, right? That being that of Afghanistan in
so,
the U.S.
Right, so we have to sit back and say, well, how did all of this happen? And who are the people who really put this into play? Because in order to fight an enemy, I believe this anyway, in order to fight an enemy effectively, you have to identify. And you have to identify the enemy, identify the game plan, identify the playbook of the enemy, and understand what to, you know, identify the tools of the enemy and the events that they create so you can avoid being trapped by them, being ensnared by them. That's why this is so important. Because you can look at today's news. You can look at the, or even go back and watch some documentaries, Walter Cronkite and Howard K. Smith and all these people. The Huntley-Brinkley report. You've got to understand the level of programming that was being barraged that by television, mm-hmm. and by the news, and our parents were part of this. We were part of this.
I actually showed my mom this weekend the video of Walter Cronkite. He was retiring, and they held a banquet ceremony for him, and Hillary Clinton was there and yep. introduced them. And my mom had never seen this part before, where he referenced, I think it was Paul Robertson or Pat Buchanan, saying that we'll never achieve a one-world government until Jesus returns to establish his thousand-year reign. And Walter Cronkite says, well, join me as I sit at the right hand of Satan.
Yeah, it was said partly tongue-in-cheek, and I think you're paraphrasing it.
I am paraphrasing, yes.
But it was said somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but with this huge ego of Walter Cronkite.
And do a YouTube search, Walter Cronkite, Satan, and yeah. it will come up, and you'll be able to
see
these.
Yeah, you can see it.
It's a minute 13, I think.
Again, the numerical aspect of things, rather interesting. Of course, the clip might not be, I mean, the conversation might not be at minute 13 exactly, but notice the numbers. And I was going through some things too, and I know we have some news to get to, but I just found it interesting, Joe, that I was going through some, we've got the Super Bowl halftime show coming up that we need to be paying attention to. All of this symbolism, if we accept we're being gamed, then we have to accept that there are gamers, okay? And if we accept that, then we have to accept that they have their own little communication system. And if mm-hmm. we accept that, then we have to ask, well, where is their communication system? Where are they operating? How are they communicating out in the open? What are they doing? Are they mocking us? Are they warning us? Yes, yes, both. And, of course, we see that taking place in ceremonies like the Olympics, like the halftime shows.
In irregular headlines.
In the headlines, correct. You know, and some messages are being conveyed through new numbers and symbols. I mean, I just saw I just saw all of the Illuminati style hand gestures, you know, the making of the pyramid and the covering of one eye and putting the covering of a hand, and then of course the Masonic handshakes, all these signs and symbols and
the Baphomet stance, as some do. And if you watch the music videos and performances and award shows, you'll see a lot of that. Even incorporated into the Thanksgiving Day parade. I don't remember which float it was, but it had the same symbolism.
Sure.
And it is just, it is out there everywhere. And we talked about this last week and the week before, how symbols are really the one true language that people have used from the beginning till now to communicate different things to different people for those who are initiates or understand what those mean and how the swastika is not just a Nazi symbol. It goes back long, well before the Nazis ever incorporated as a symbol. The pyramid being one, especially with the unfinished capstone, symbolizes the agenda from Nimrod, creating the Tower of Babel, and it being incomplete until we see its completion as they're trying to use the United States to bring about that completion.
And from the plains of Shinar, the Tower of Babel, Nimrod, the unfinished work of Nimrod is being completed right now. You're absolutely correct. And you're absolutely 100% correct. Let me stop you for a second. I got an email. It's difficult for me to check email during the show. I got an email from Steve K. And I'm going to read the email. Okay.
All right.
I'm going to read this because it was about a subject we just covered, and it was about Ted Cruz. And I'm going to read this. After hearing your assertion that Ted Cruz is not legitimately eligible to hold the office of president, I got on Facebook this morning and challenged you to prove it. Okay.
He's talking to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got on Facebook this morning and challenged you to prove it. Okay, well.
Had you made statements about this before tonight?
Yeah, he could very well be talking from another part of the world, so I don't know. I was a little indignant and reacted defensively. For that, I apologize. Don't worry about it. I don't see the Facebook postings, really. I don't look on Facebook. Okay, I found an article today that you better, or that, well, I guess that's your problem there in your writing. I found an article today that better states my belief that Ted Cruz is, in fact, constitutionally eligible to be POTUS. In case you don't want to use that link, I've copied it for below. Ted Cruz has proven throughout his career to be the strongest advocate for the Constitution I've seen in my lifetime. And I'm in my 50s. I'm in my 50s, too, Steve. So we've got that in common. Frankly, he writes, I found your position surprisingly out of character for Doug Hagman. All right. He writes, I think the constitutional evidence will show that your current position is misguided on this one, and it's an important issue to get right. I agree, it's a very important issue to get right. I certainly agree. Please do your due diligence while investigating the subject. I have faith that you will. Okay, what was that we just did? That was due diligence, I believe, right?
Well, you went over the actual history from his parents.
No, and Steve, I'm not picking on you, okay?
No, this needs to be clarified because, see, this is the problem. We saw a lot of people, not in the media or in positions of authority to make a difference, raise the issue of eligibility with Obama.
That's right. And we were told, that's not the issue. That's a diversion. Don't bring it up. So go ahead.
Now, just because there's a candidate in there who might be good, who I'm not saying we like, but people like, conservatives like, who might actually be good for the country, we're supposed to overlook the fact that he's not eligible because he might be good. This is what has gotten us into the mess we're in now.
I'm privy to communications that even, you know, Meredith Vieira, you know, that celebrity Meredith Vieira, her brother even said he's not eligible.
The one that was on Millionaire.
Yeah. Okay. That went goo-goo over the Marine and herself. Yeah. All right. But anyway, I don't know which part of this, Steve, you object to. I will check out that Breitbart link that you had given. I do believe, and it without okay. Look, a Canadian citizen could very well be constitutional. You know, be biased toward the United States Constitution. He could be the strongest advocate for the Constitution. That doesn't change the fact that he could perhaps not be eligible, based on the Constitution itself.
Our current Commander-in-Chief is a constitutional scholar.
Well, that's, yeah.
And lawyer.
Yeah. But see, I read, go back and listen to what I said. And I'm not going to spend any more time on this because I do believe, really, that, or I don't believe that really it matters all that much in the bigger picture because we are being gamed. However, for those people who really want to uphold the Constitution, as I do, but for the people who believe that our Constitution still is valid across the United States, we have to look at this without any type of, we have to look at this with intellectual honesty. Folks, look, if we do an investigation, and I have to say this, as a investigator in the private sector, I did perhaps one of the most difficult investigations in my life, and that was investigating the murder of a family member. And so I was investigating friends of my family and my family with the idea that if it came back, whoever it was, this 5-year-old cold case unsolved murder, it didn't matter to me if it came back wherever the evidence led me. That was the bottom line on it. If it led me to wherever within the family, that's the way it is. So we have to look at this with intellectual honesty. I ask you, Steve, and I ask you, I had given, I'm not going to go through this Cruz citizenship timeline again. This is all a matter of public record. All of it is based on publicly reported events, public statements made by Cruz's father, public statements made by Ted Cruz, officials with the Elect Ted movement. It doesn't matter how much he loves and advocates the Constitution. If he's not eligible, he's not eligible.
Period.
End of story. And I'll be glad to look at your link and with an open mind and the intellectual honesty, but I challenge you that all of the statements I made during this program, I challenge you, sir. Find fault with them. Find error in those statements. Go ahead.
All right. Let's move on to some news. This is a story that you pointed out. Dad, as ISIS tells Western supporters to wear aftershave and Christian crosses while plotting new peristyle attacks.
Yep.
Terror group released an English language manual telling readers how to avoid security services. Militants fighting for ISIS in Syria and Iraq have issued a chilling guide advising would-be jihadists living in the West on how to avoid security services while plotting Paris-style attacks. The 58-page English language manual, which has been published online, tells fanatics to wear or to trim their beards, wear Western-style aftershave, and even pretend to be Christians by wearing cross necklaces in order to avoid arousing suspicion. The document, titled Safety and Security Guidelines for Lone Wolf Mujahideen, explains not only how militants can avoid having a plot thwarted by Western security officials, but also suggesting potential targets to attack. The document, titled Safety and Security Guidelines for Lone Wolf Mujahideen, explains how militants can avoid having their terror plots thwarted. No doubt that today, at an era of lone wolves, brothers in the West need to know some important things about safety in order to ensure success in their operations. The document introduction reads, "We found a lot of non-Arabic speaking brothers and find it interesting and how it may apply in their blessed operation," it adds, suggesting militants can carry out attacks on nightclubs where loud music and lack of obvious exits could cause additional panic. The guide also explains how radicalized Muslims who are not from a Western background could avoid making simple mistakes that could out them as terrorists.
That's right. The whole thing is, this magazine, and folks, please understand what Joe's getting at, I printed this out. There's a magazine. There's two things going on here. There's a magazine that...
Cybernetic.
Right. It's a German, I think it was released in Germany. It's an ISIS magazine. It's kind of equivalent to Inspire magazine. Al-Qaeda published Inspire magazine here in the United States. It's a English language magazine. And now this magazine for ISIS in the Middle East and Western Europe. What they're saying is this. Do lone wolf attacks. Do small-scale attacks using a limited number of people, but don't get caught. Dress like a Christian. Act like a Christian. Trim your beard. See, Muslim Islam allows this. So you go ahead and wear a cross. Just, it'd be like me running around with a Quran, okay?
And a full-blown beard.
And one of those beards.
And this is troublesome because, we're thinking about this from one vantage point. That is, having ISIS terrorists change their appearance in order to better blend into society for ease of carrying out attacks. Well, let's take it a step further. Say they're successful in carrying out attacks because of their the way they blend in and what this magazine instructs them to do.
Yep.
Could we put it past the media and the government to where they would leave it as attacks by Christians rather than calling it for what it really is, ISIS attacks, because of how they dress and how they appear to be? I guess the question is, blending in to make yourself look like a Christian and carrying out attacks, would the news and the media dig deep enough, or would they allow this to be the narrative that it was Christians who attacked as like a new form of Christians, you know, becoming ISIS members, or, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that bothers me because I don't put it past the news or the government at all. I believe that they would and could do this and would propagate that.
But see, I mean, so what we're seeing here is this Islamic, this element of Islamic, terrorism. This is obvious. Remember us talking about, and we have to go back to World War II and World War I, and I, we talked about this, and I know that some new people are listening today that didn't listen before and are new to the program and wanted some expansion on this. I'm not prepared to do that right now, but understand that Islam was weaponized back in World War II. World War I, yes, but into World War II especially, Islam was weaponized. And Himmler had understood that Islam having the predilection toward violence, using the sword to cut people's heads off, that being in the Quran, and considering that Christian was not a manly religion. This is all documented, folks, in history. This set up one of the biggest frameworks of the weaponization of a mass group of people. And this set up the weaponization of Islam. This brought us to where we are today. Each and every component of history, given the historical context of the 20th century, Islam in the 20th century, Islam in the early 20th century, and how, and the refinement of terrorism by the Brzezinski, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and by the CFR and the Trilateral Commission through the policies of each one of these groups, you cannot discount their involvement in the refinement of this. So what we're seeing today,
you can actually establish in a court of law a case for responsibility on their part.
Yeah. So all we're saying to you is, yes, there is a predisposition toward violence by Muslims, given the self, I mean, you could look at the surahs and the Quran. You could look at the Quran itself and all of the accompanying oral traditions of the Islamic faith and, or the Islamic cult, depending on how you want to legally describe it. And you can see that yeah, okay, they are predisposed to cutting someone's hand off for shoplifting. They're predisposed for subjugating women and subjugating non-believers.
And that's their culture. I mean, that's been part of their culture.
Now, we have to be careful when we say culture, because there's the religion and culture. So, for example, wearing a burqa is a cultural aspect as opposed to a religious commandment. Okay.
Okay.
Now, but you're right. The culture and religion have been mixed together in this, at least in my view. And I think you made a good point, because we need to make the distinction between the cultural aspect of a religion or a cult or a group of people or a ideology and the cultural aspect. They're different.
Think about 9/11 and before 9/11, you had things like the USS Cole, which was an organized terrorist attack. You had other terrorist attacks that would happen throughout time and it wasn't an everyday thing, nor was it uncommon, to say the least. But they were not like it was not like it was today with the intensity and the violence. What changed that increased the violence or turned the
in their
Islamist
case
into the violent, the religion of violence we see today?
Well, okay, again, it's always been predisposed to violence. But I think what you just said right there is the key, is the golden nugget to everything that we're looking at today. What changed? For example, 1980, let's not use an 80, 1976, America's bicentennial. All right. You weren't around, Eric, you weren't around. I guess I can remember that as an adult, celebrating America's bicentennial.
We had our city's bicentennial, I remember, but yeah. I know.
1976, okay. Look at the headlines. Did we see this surging of Muslim terrorists in the Middle East? No. Of course, we had the 1972 slaughter in Munich at the Munich Olympics by the Arab contingent where the Israeli athletes were killed. Yes, we had this hijacking and the subsequent raid at the Entebbe airport. Of course, we saw that. That was July 4th of, was that 76, folks? I don't know. I believe it was. So there were definite incidents, but nothing like today. And so your question is, what has changed to inflame the passions, the ideological passions of Islam, of the Muslims?
Right.
What has changed?
Because if it's always been, you know, the way we see it today, where, you know, you conform to Islam or you are an infidel subject to
right.
death and whatnot, you know, we've seen history where even Jews and Arabs lived peacefully together after the state of Israel was readmitted as a state, re-recognized as a state. There was peace there. There was not this division. And this goes throughout most of the world. You had Arabs that were like any other group of people, Islam, people who had believed in Islam, you know, able to live next door to a Christian on one side and, you know, a Buddhist on the other
right.
side in peace.
Right.
And they trusted each other. They were neighbors. They were treating each other like humans. To where now we see the just difference of religion is cause enough to commit murder or acts of violence. That is confusing to me. How it's increased to the point where it's morphed into something other than what it always was or has been. Now, there's always been religious conflicts
yes,
from the Crusades
yes.
to...
But the Crusades now... Again, I want to caution everyone about this because the Crusades are not what they are purported to be.
Okay, but as an example.
Yes, I'll stipulate to that. Go ahead.
To the point where we have in just this vehement opposition to the point we have caliphates now. It's all or nothing. You can't have basically a person who's believing in Islam is an infidel if they get along with their Christian neighbors or their Jewish neighbors. I mean, it has to. It's almost like something has changed, where the literature or the scripture of the Quran has changed, or is read differently, or interpreted differently.
Right. It's not.
And it's confusing.
I mean, it's, when we say, and I'm thinking how to put this because I don't want to provide a misleading statement. There, think of. Well. I won't even use an analogy. I'll just address it directly. When we're looking at the Muslims, we're looking at, okay, what has changed? I believe, let me just get right into it. I believe there are two things that changed. I believe that at the beginning of the 20th century, when we saw the technological revolution, and Paul McGuire talks about this and others talk about this, Tom Horn and Steve Quayle and so many others, I believe that there was a releasing of watchers technology and perhaps some of the watchers themselves. Okay, now you might think, wow, is this guy on drugs? I mean, really? You know, the angels that were bound up or...
None that would lead him to think crazily like that.
But you really have to... Okay, so... Because look at the 20th century. Did all of a sudden... People and my wife and I talk about this all the time. I mean, I bring this up to her all the time, and I drive her crazy. In fact, she hits me. I'm beat. Okay, but this connects to what you're talking about. Look at life in 1899, and then look at life in 1999. Look at the vast, incredible revolution, technological revolution that took place.
Yeah.
Now look at 1999 to 2009.
So much worse.
Different, right? Even exponentially worse, but exponentially more. Now look at 2009 to 2016. well, even 10 years ago, you wouldn't, I mean, people were talking about, wouldn't be talking about, you know, transplanting heads and living to 100.
Right. I mean, you have, you know, 80 and. In Europe, you see these random attacks where Muslims are running around beheading police officers in the street.
There you go. Yeah, I should have segued. I'm sorry. I didn't give you the proper segue. That's my fault. So now look at Islam, and then I'll let you continue. Look at Islam. Look at the changes from 1899, and we understand some of that has to do with transportation and making the world smaller by going plane trips and such. But you're right. Now look at, but just look at the 1969, we'll say, the Islamic, and take out the Israeli factor for just a moment, but although that's important, but look at the predisposition of Muslims toward immediate and 100% violence. Now go ahead with your statement.
Yeah, and as an example, I'm going to use a family example. On my mom's side, her sister married a Muslim man, and I spent a lot of time with him as a child, and he showed me his Quran and would, you know, I didn't understand it, so he kind of explained it to me what the difference of, you know, because I didn't understand the different religions out there, and I was younger, 12 years old. Well, he would teach me, I would ask him why he would eat certain meals on holidays, like duck instead of ham, or, and he would explain how pork is something that their religious practice didn't allow. But never once did I ever hear him teach any kind of violence or any kind of, and this is a small example, but, what I've been thinking about and what bothers me is, as I said earlier, what has changed to allow the increase of violence, not only to where the violence is coming, but it is now acceptable or glorified as it is and rewarded. We see the violence that has continued to escalate. We see the attitudes from Muslims that, as I said, glorify, reward violence to the point they're teaching their kids and showing their kids, sending their kids on suicide missions. This culture of death in Islam, where it's all or nothing, where with my memories talking with my uncle who was Muslim, nothing of violence or that never came up. You know, it was you believe what you want to believe, but this is what I believe, and you know.
Okay, we'll I'm going to open this up a little bit more, though. I don't believe that a westernized Muslim, for example, someone who is born in the United States, somebody in the West, I don't believe that there was an automatic predisposition toward violence. I believe that when we talked about religion and culture, I think the influence of culture, especially those Muslims in the Middle East, there's a heavy influence there.
Well,
that is not to excuse. But wait a second. I just want to say one more thing. That doesn't change the fact that this is a death-centric ideology. Go ahead.
Well, let's look at the fact of how, you know, many Muslims have migrated over to America to start businesses and to assimilate into the culture of America without committing acts of violence, without, you know, supporting those who commit acts of violence, who live peacefully amongst Americans and just, you know, we coexist. But then there's this other faction of Muslims who, that's their whole mission in life, as it seems. It's like there's two separate religions in the one. It's like the Catholic Church and the...
I don't agree with you there. I agree that the ideology is very, very clear. And I don't believe that there are two ideologies or two separate religions. I believe that the fundamentalists, just like Christian fundamentalists, you know, the different denominations. But I do believe that at its core, Islam, if you follow Muhammad and read the Quran and read the Surah, and if you are a practicing Muslim, it's going to require you to do things.
And I've never read the Quran.
Well, boy, you know, it's really should.
And I've talked to, you know, we've talked to lots of people from who are experts on the Quran to who are experts on, you know, Christianity. But I just don't, the increase in escalation of violence is so you can't be ignored.
Right. And the question, and at the root of this discussion, and this is exactly what this is tonight, folks, is a discussion. And you might be throwing things at your radio, at your computer, at your iPad, and that's okay.
Because people need to get a better understanding of this, because I don't understand it to the point where, well, you know, it just doesn't make sense.
It does make sense. It makes perfect sense because we're being gamed. I mean, you know,
that makes sense. Yes.
Okay. By itself, for example, did the overthrow by Western intelligence assets and interests, and that includes the United States, Israel, and the UK, France, of Libya, did that by itself make any sense to the world? Of course not.
No, but and that's a great example. In Libya, in Iraq, before these overthrows, you had Muslims and Christians living in a world where they were able to live together without the threat of violence. The leaders would keep peace and stability amongst the two
even
religions.
If they were right, just as Bashar al-Assad is doing with the Christians, right. The Alawites, the okay, we understand. Look, we understand he's a dictator. We understand that. We're not making any excuses for him. However, now we're talking about Syria now.
There was never this Christian-Islamic conflict before these leaders were taken away.
Okay, but there was, but it was not manipulated like it is today. Okay?
Okay,
it was always percolating under the surface, and this really began in earnest. And people will roll their eyes perhaps when we talk about the establishment of Israel as a nation in 1948. That really began. That really renewed the resentment. Because the Arabs believe they received the short end of the stick on that deal, and the Jews believe they received the short end of the stick on that deal, the establishment of Israel as a nation state in 1948. And of course, you go back in history and understand the Balfour Declaration, and then you've got to understand really you have to understand everything that led up to 1948, the establishment of Israel as a nation, and then what happened with Jerusalem. You really have to have a full understanding of that and how that relates to the Arab sentiment / Arab Muslim sentiment / Arab Muslim versus Jew, Arab Muslim versus Jew and Christian.
And I've listened to a lot of testimonies of people from, Israelites who were in Israel, that before it was became the nation again, who talked about the peaceful living amongst Arabs before that establishment, and how how that changed after the establishment of Israel as a nation, and then after the Six-Day War, and how that had escalated, and before the intervention of governments and whatnot into the affairs of the Middle East.
But see, Joe,
it was very peaceful.
Yeah, but see, okay, and here's how I think that. And folks,
which leads us to the whole point of me bringing this up. When we talk about the birth pains that are in the Bible, the beginning of sorrows, the tribulations leading up to the tribulations, all nations coming against Israel, the conflicts, the wars, the pestilence, that has all been leading up to this. And it's going to continue. We're never going to go back to the way it once was.
If you espouse that belief that we are in that path, in that final throw toward the tribulation.
It could be 100 years from now, it could be 10 minutes from now.
Right. We are not going to have that level of peace until there's that false peace.
Right.
Okay, correct. Now, there was a point I wanted to make, and it tossed me off.
I apologize.
Yeah, that's all right. But and this is something that I think that really we have to look at this entire platform, this entire venue, this entire theater. We have to look at what's taking place in the world with everything in the Middle East, and this boy, everything has been planned. Now, that doesn't mean all the plans have been successful, but everything has been planned. Well, I believe that we made a difference, and I'm kind of scattered here in this part, but I'm going to bring this back around if you listen closely. I believe that we collectively as Christians made a difference in what happened in Syria. I mean, remember a couple of years ago, those who were listeners a couple of years ago, we had prayer and really 5 weeks of special Sunday shows praying that the evil machinations of the people in power would not ignite Assyria.
Right. 2013.
Right. And I believe that maybe it certainly wasn't just us, but perhaps we contributed to maybe facilitated or maybe assisted in bumping that down the road and screwing up the schedule of the global elite. I believe that.
And what happened from the lack of action was the creation or the ISIS coming on the scene.
Which
is repackaging the problem in order to go after it a different way. So instead of going into Syria and bombing Syria because Assad crossed the red line, what they did was repackaged the threat and gave a new excuse for us to enter into Syria because the American people rejected what they offered the first time.
Which reminds me of the thought I lost earlier, and that is this. People like to believe today there's only two sides to a conflict, and there's more than that. Now, in the greater scheme of things, there's good versus evil, evil versus good. That's the black and the white two sides. But the components of this fight that we see, there's more sides to it. It's not just, for example, U.S. v. Russia, Russia versus the United States, or China versus Russia, or China versus the United States, that is, or U.S. versus Syria. It's not that. No, what's taking place right now is this multifaceted operation. It's that has all of the elements of evil, all of the elements of good, at war with one another at different sides. I mean, we've got this multifaceted battle taking place. So you've got to understand this, because this goes back, this goes back to the Wolfowitz doctrine with PNAC and how that kind of catapulted us into this conflict, this state that we're in right now that actually had created bedfellows between what some people term as the neocons. And if you can believe this, the neocons have found interesting bedfellows with the most Marxist of people, because the objectives were similar, the pathways were a tad different, the objectives were similar, so let's work together.
Right.
And that's what we're seeing. So when you have two opposing or seemingly opposing ideologies, especially domestically, working together, it's really a mind bender. And so we have to look beyond this, because look what's happening in Europe. You're going to have 10 million Muslim immigrants flooding into Europe in the next soon. I mean, it's going to be an overwhelming number. It's going to happen here in the United States, that, or at least that's what's scheduled to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, this is by design. This is not because, 3 years from now, will people be on the radio saying, gee, I wonder what caused that. I wonder what changed back in, back in 2015 or 2014 or 2013. I wonder what happened.
Well, just like ISIS said they were going to do, it was going to be an organized
invasion.
Invasion, using Syrian refugees, they said. And the government turns around and says Syrian refugees, and especially here in America, it has been Syrian Muslim refugees. They have been giving Christians a hard time, deporting Christians, not allowing the Christian Syrians to come in, which is a whole other story on its own that we need to cover.
Right.
Because I've heard...
I think there's only...
there's stories that, the Obama administration is actually going out of its way to block certain Syrian Christians from entering while opening the door for Syrian Muslims to enter. And if it was truly a humanitarian issue, why then would we make a distinction on religion when dealing with a humanitarian crisis? Yes, we can give you aid and help and comfort only if you are a Muslim. If you're a Christian, you do not qualify. If it's truly a humanitarian crisis, to the extent they say it is, why make any distinction on any lines, whether it be racial, religious, or any other?
And there it is, folks. It's not. You see, it's a humanitarian crisis, an orchestrated humanitarian crisis. Now, it's not. It's designed. It's like the Oleg Cassini or Prada of humanitarian crisis. It's a designer humanitarian crisis.
And on the heels of the crisis in Syria and the elitists benefiting from it, this from a story today, Cheney, Rothschild, and Fox News' Murdoch to drill for oil in Syria. And we're going to talk about Stan, with Stan about this tomorrow. While Syria is torn apart by the warning of U.S. imperialists and Islamic fundamentalists, leaving its children to die of starvation, another country plans to take advantage of the chaos by stealing the resources of Syrian southern refugee or the Syrian southern region. The theft will be carried out by the most notorious pushers of military hegemony, and they don't care that it violates international law. What they're doing is, you know, Dick Cheney, the Rothschilds, and Rupert Murdoch are going to be taking oil from Syria, violating international law, and taking oil and gas from reserves that have been located in the Syrian territory occupied by Israel since 1967, known as the Golan Heights. Now, I don't agree with the verbiage in the way this article is written, but basically, they're Dick Cheney, Rupert Murdoch, and Jacob Rothschild, and their henchmen have a long tradition of promoting war in the Middle East in order to exploit the oil resources. And this cabal formed under Genie Energy, led by the unapologetic Arab hater.
Yes, Arab hater who?
Look how small the print is.
Well, you can't even read that.
It's Adam.
I can't even see.
Ethel Edelman.
It's fine. It's fine. You get the idea.
Drilling in the Golan Heights.
What'd you print that on? A mini printer?
On my computer. No, I'm from that computer to that printer. I don't know why I printed so small, but what they're doing, Mr. Murdoch of Fox News, Jacob Rothschild, Dick Cheney, and their corporations will be taking advantage of the war-torn land of Syria and northern Israel to be drilling for oil there in order to make money off the instability in Syria. I mean, just another level of depravity.
Well, all right. And this goes back. And you know what? I know people hate it when I talk like that. I sound like I'm...
What, like this?
I'm stuttering. And let me ask this. We should do a show. I believe that we should do a show. Spend a couple of hours talking about... We actually... Chris Pinnell, Georgia Guidestones, we watched the documentary.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
But
don't say much about it because can't spoil the fun.
Oh, I won't spoil the fun.
But do you think we should do a show about the Nazi? See, okay, about the run up to where we're at today, so people better understand this. Include, we'll have like the main thrust is the main highway, or the main highway is the main thrust of the program, and then little roads that connect to that being. For example, the wars, the different wars, the counterculture, and how all of this, these roads feed into this arterial, this one artery of traffic.
Yes, we should do something even beyond that. We should take maybe even a week and do a week's worth of shows giving the true history of the Nazi regime, who their partners were, who they were in bed with, how it unfolded to the Holocaust, and how it unfolded to World War II. Where it went from World War II, what happened to the Nazis, and how their influence has continued into and throughout today.
You know, Joe,
not just the history of after the war.
Right,
or,
right, right.
I
yes.
mean, all-encompassing from the beginning to end, Hitler's rise to today.
And Hitler was a Rothschild, and we have to get into that lineage, too. To understand the history, how intricate the intricacies of history, to understand that everything is interrelated. Yes, events, there are some events that are just totally random. And yes, there are plans with the objectives of the power elite that don't get accomplished on time or in the manner in which they were planned. But the events are working together for this final conflict that we will know as, well, Armageddon. Folks, we'll turn right back. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.